This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Given the removal Friday of the Confederate flag from the South Carolina State House grounds, it's been that state's legislature and its governor, Nikki Haley, who have gotten most of the media's attention in recent weeks, even in North Carolina. But our legislature is still in session during these hot summer months. They're still wrangling over the budget and have continued to pass controversial legislation, most recently a law that dramatically changes district lines for Greensboro's city council elections, doing away with at-large seats in favor of eight individual districts. Meanwhile, Governor Pat McCrory has proposed an infrastructure bond package, which has run into unsurprising opposition in the Senate. There seems to be little love lost between the GOP-controlled Senate and our Republican governor. They disagree on a number of issues, including that redistricting law, which Governor McCrory has called shameful. The governor has also called on citizens to contact state legislators to urge them to vote to place his $2.85 billion bond package on the ballot this November. So this hour, we talk about that package and many other things with Governor Pat McCrory, who joins us in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome back.
It's good to see you again. Last time we saw each other was, what, a couple weeks ago at Charlotte Squawks?
Yes, it was.
You did a good job.
Thank you, and so did you. The governor, you appeared three times live.
I had fun. I had fun.
I thought you may have had fun.
My family kept My sister came and my brothers came and we had a great time.
So that's your excuse.
And my wife saw the videos and she did laugh. At the, when I showed it to her, I was afraid she was going to, you're not doing this. But she actually laughed out loud in the other room while observing the, okay, the video.
Well, let's start with something serious. Let's talk about the bond package. Whenever we talk about things, I think we need to explain how bonds work because people think that they don't understand how they work. It's $2.85 billion. It's a lot of money. If voters are allowed to vote on that package in November and they say yes to it, bonds obviously will be issued, which essentially means we're borrowing the money from investors. How will the money be paid back?
It'll be paid back under our existing debt bond model, just like we did when I was mayor of Charlotte for many, many years. And in fact, our debt in the next after the next 3 years, I believe, 3 or 4 years, would be less even with these bonds than it is today because we're paying off debts from 15 years ago. North Carolina has not done a bond for over 15 years. And during that time, we've now become the ninth most populous state in the United States of America. And it's time we invest in new infrastructure. I've always considered myself kind of an Eisenhower Republican and who believes, as I did as mayor, in investing in transportation, universities, community colleges, our state park system, our port system, our intermodal system, and our military. And that's where the bond money would go. And actually, $2.8 billion is not a lot of money in comparison to what our budget is. In fact, it's a smaller bond package than was for universities just 15 years ago, over 15 years ago. And so we're talking about a $22 billion budget. So $2.8 billion bonds isn't a lot borrowing capacity, but it's actually a very fiscally conservative and responsible bond package, which I want to allow the people to vote on.
Infrastructure is a problem across the country, but I was taking a look at some of the road proposals in this bond package yesterday.
We call it NC Connects, by the way. The bond package is connecting North Carolina, not only the metropolitan areas with each other, but urban and rural areas with each other and connecting with other states. For example, Elizabeth City, the best opportunity for Elizabeth City's recovery is to connect with Hampton Roads, Virginia. This is coming from the governor of North Carolina. I realized when I was governor, mayor of Charlotte, that Rock Hill did a great job of connecting to Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And why don't we borrow that same concept in other parts of the states?
Well, as a former mayor of Charlotte, you know that Mecklenburg has this, I'm not sure it's a complex, but we certainly feel shortchanged by the state.
They have been.
In terms of roads and things like that. And I looked at the bond package, and the road improvements are in Wake, Forsyth, Cleveland, McDowell, Beaufort, and other areas. Nothing here.
Wow. Well, actually, because here got a lot of changes in our I changed the formula as governor 2 years ago on how we distribute road money. As a result of that change, the Charlotte regions get a lot more road money than they ever would have without the change in our formula. Before, when I was mayor, we had what they called the equity formula, which did not consider congestion, which did not consider safety, which did not consider economic development. It was basically based upon politics. So when I changed that formula to the mobility formula, congestion now is one of the major parameters of where existing road money can be spent, and Charlotte's doing extremely well because of that. And you're going to start seeing that those road construction projects are going on right now. But the region still gets a lot of money that are still very, very important to Charlotte. For example, the Statesville interchange on I-77, which is extremely important to Charlotte. That thing is very, very poor interchange. You've got some the Shelby bypass up to Asheville, which would help tremendously this region. And you've also got further 74 options available on Highway 74, of course. I'm really trying to connect Asheville and Charlotte and Wilmington together for the first time without any stops whatsoever, and that's very, very beneficial to Charlotte.
I was going to ask you about the toll road project.
And I-77 is getting a lot of money north toward the South Carolina border, too.
All right. I was going to ask you about the toll road project later on in the program, but as long as we're talking about bond money for infrastructure and road improvements, what about that? If there's money in the – if you can put money into bonds for road construction, why not put that toll road into the bonds and eliminate the toll portion of it?
There isn't enough.
Because people do not like that.
Yeah, there isn't enough money. And I might add, this toll road project started in 2007, long before I was governor. In fact, 4 or 5 years before I was governor. And it was approved several times by the local elected officials with no opposition, I believe. And it's ironic now after the contracts were signed, all of a sudden you've got a lot of politicians, frankly, covering themselves and going, I'm now against it, when they've been supporting it for the last 6 years. But there isn't enough money. I mean, $1.6 billion for roads, that one project would take probably 30 or 40% of it for the entire state. And that's not how the road formula works.
So you can't make it a bigger bond package to cover that?
You could make it a bigger – even with a bigger bond package, it wouldn't fit because, I mean, you would have to have 2 or 3 times as large bond package to get that in. And that would, again, take a huge percentage of that bond money for the entire state just on one road. That's a very, very expensive road. And that's one reason we had the local officials – during the past 7 years, approved this. The Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is comprised of county and city officials in this region, all approved this road project and this system. If they had just 2 years ago, when I became governor, said we're opposed to it, I would have stopped it. You can't stop something once you already begin the process, or there's major penalties, and that's the problem. Again, I think you've got a lot of politicians who are all of a sudden – saying, boy, we didn't read it. Well, whose fault is that?
How much of it is also the fact that citizens didn't know much about it until it comes out in the paper and the media starts reporting
on it? Well, there were public hearings about this since 2007. And again, I think a lot of this – there was a group of citizens up in Cornelius that have expressed opposition, but the elected officials in that area and other areas of this region continue to support it since 2007. Again, this started – under the Purdue administration, and we continued it based upon the votes of the local planning organization, which is comprised of the elected officials.
The people who are opposed to this are opposed to it because no one, and including, and we did a whole hour on this with people involved in it, and no one will tell you what it will cost to use the toll lane. They just won't put a number on it. So it could cost you anywhere from $20 to $50, I'm told, to actually be in the toll lane because the price changes all the time.
The choice will be based upon the market value, but everyone will have a choice in whether they want – unless you – it also will be an HOV lane where people will be able to use that as an HOV lane.
But if they pay for it.
Three or more people can use it as an HOV lane.
So the people are upset by that. They're upset by the fact that we're giving a contract to a company for 50 years – and to run this thing.
They have known this.
I don't think the public knew it.
The local politicians who voted for this have known this for 7 years. And it's ironic when I hear state senators and other local mayors all of a sudden, and county commissioners, all of a sudden, woe and behold, we're reading it for the first time. Well,
so you're in favor of it?
I would not have been had they opposed it 2 years ago. I would have stopped it. But the local officials were still supporting it.
And tell me why it can't be stopped.
And as you know, I'm going to be consistent, as I am. If the local officials want something, I come from local government. If the local officials ask for something, I'm going to do everything I can to make their request come through. And that's why I don't want state government making all the decisions for local government.
So we keep being told it's too late to stop it.
You just said
that. Why is it too late to stop it?
Because the contracts had been signed and the work has already been done. The money is being borrowed as we speak by the private sector to begin this process. And there'd be a substantial fine, which, again, that money would be taken out of road money.
Okay. Let's go back to your bond program, because the Senate has to take a different approach. They want to increase the annual construction budget over the course of the next 10 years, as opposed to borrowing the money now and paying it off later. What's the difference, really, between these two approaches?
The first approach, again, I'm not opposed to the transfer. This is pretty complex, but I have no problem in using existing money for future infrastructure, but it won't be enough. We need more money for roads than that money. And by the way, I also have to pay for the highway patrol. So when you transfer a certain money out of the highway trust fund that's paying for the highway patrol, that doesn't mean we have to stop paying for the highway patrol. Highway patrol costs about $230 million a year, and I think we still want that. I do. And so we still have to have money to pay for other maintenance and operations issues. So I'm trying to get the biggest bang for our dollar. And from a financial standpoint, we can get the biggest bang from our dollar by borrowing money at the lowest interest rate that we'll see in our lifetime.
Although,
and the longer we wait, the interest rates are going to only go up. And for every interest rate going up, you're talking about tens of millions of dollars that won't go into road money.
Of course, these bonds won't all be issued at the same time.
That's correct.
They'll only be issued as the money is needed.
Well,
interest rates could go up through each issue.
That's not necessary. We may depends. I'll take the financial expert's advice on when and how much to borrow.
But
as I did when I was mayor of Charlotte.
Okay, but as we issue these new bonds, if the total is $2.85 billion, as we issue each new bond, the interest rate on those bonds may vary.
That's correct.
So the time to do it is now, you're saying, because they're really low.
As much as possible now. And almost all the banks and so forth saying they're going to start going up fourth quarter, and they'll start most likely. We don't know. But they're very, very low now. And I talked to a member of the Federal Reserve, and he said, if I were you, I'd borrow it for 100 years. Because I said, why 100 years? And he was kind of just making a point.
Right.
Because they'll never be – do you think they'll be lower in 100 years? I mean, some businesses are borrowing money right now because they're so low, it's almost like free money for businesses. And, I'm just trying to – we did the same thing when I was mayor of Charlotte. Thank God we borrowed some money. And this is like a mortgage. It's not like – I just paid off $2.6 billion of debt. When I say the state of North Carolina, for unemployment compensation that we owed the federal government. That, to me, was living off of a credit card because we had nothing in return for that after the money was paid off. So I wanted to pay that off as early as possible. I'm very, very proud of paying off that $2.6 billion for unemployment. But borrowing for infrastructure is something Eisenhower did, something we have done many, many times in the city of Charlotte, and it's the best return on investment as long as you have a payment plan to pay it back.
Is the only disagreement the way we're going to get the money, the way we're going to fund these projects, or is there disagreement over the need for the projects?
I think
themselves?
There is some disagreement. I have some legislators who are just against borrowing money, which is foolish because they approved a budget last year that borrowed money, frankly, for maintenance, which we should never do. And I was opposed to that. So
you say
some
legislators,
of those people voted.
When you say legislators, are you talking about the Senate or the House?
I probably have both House and Senate members who just go, we're against borrowing money. But
okay.
I think that's still a minority. But again, I believe in having a sound fiscal economic development plan and investing in infrastructure. It's if not now, when?
Governor Pat McCrory is our guest this hour, 704-926-WFAE. Remember, you can also get to us by email, charlottetalks@wfae.org, or on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Forum Pharmaceuticals, evaluating the safety and effectiveness of a possible new medication for Alzheimer's disease. Info about participation in the study available at 704-446-7511. Well, you know, historically, Charlotte has been a city of suburban neighborhood, but in recent years, A more urban profile has been developing, with apartments and condominiums cropping up like weeds. And now something new is coming to town, co-housing. Never heard of that, have you? I haven't. These communities have individual homes, but also extensive shared open spaces, playgrounds, courtyards, and a common house. Co-housing is about design and about a community culture state of mind, and we'll find out more about it tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Greece proposes a new bailout deal to Eurozone creditors. What's in the plan? The response from European leaders and what it could mean for Greek citizens.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte talks with Mike Collins on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Governor Pat McCrory is with us in our studio here at Spirit Square, and we're going to take your calls today, something we haven't done in a long time.
Love doing that with me.
I know. I do love doing that with you. 704-926-WFAE. That's 9323. Put your headphones on if you would, Governor, and we'll take a call from a fellow who's been holding on for a while now. Robert in Charlotte, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Governor McCrory. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Wanted to talk about how the or get your assessment of how the corporate tax reduction and the bond package is interrelated from a corporate business standpoint, because I like the fact that you're cutting the corporate taxes, because if the federal government would sort of look at that, I guess that Apple money would be back on shore. But how does that all attract the long-term process of tax and bond money, such that we generate the tax base to pay for those bonds?
Well, the way we pay for the bonds is to continue to grow the economy. And thankfully, the Charlotte region and North Carolina's economy is growing. And we're very pleased during my first 2 years in office, with support of the legislature and leadership of the legislature, we cut the corporate tax rate by 2% and the income tax by 2% to be lower than South Carolina and Virginia. And as you know, in this area, that 1% or 2% was making a big difference on which side of the border people were going to. And we think in the long term and in the short term, we're going to create more jobs in North Carolina, more businesses investing in North Carolina, which bring more revenue, which then help pay for future bonds and infrastructure spending. And I'm a firm believer that – and I did this as mayor, and I'm very pleased. And then when I come back to Charlotte, that – we're in about the 20th year of the transportation plan that I and several others put together on a napkin back in 1996. And to see that plan come to fruition, that's how long it takes. You're really doing infrastructure for the next generation. And when I recruit businesses to not only the Charlotte region but the rest of the state, I show them our new 25-year transportation plan for the state of North Carolina, just like I used to do for the mayor of Charlotte. You know, I used to show them the mass transit plan that will be in place in the next 20 years. And they go, wow, you're investing in the future just like we are. So it becomes a great selling point to bring businesses to North Carolina and to the Charlotte region.
Robert, thank you for your call. You mentioned taxes a second ago, and there's an article in the paper this morning about people in the legislature wanting to cut personal income taxes again, perhaps by another 0.25%. And you say the time's not right for that. Why?
I think the ink isn't dry on the major tax reform that we just completed 14 months ago that I made an agreement with both the Senate and House in my first 2 years. And I think we need to have some continuity and see how well that works. And so far, we're getting very good feedback. But to all of a sudden bust that open again, and by lowering that, though, we've got to increase a lot of other taxes, including new taxes on machinery, new taxes on services, new taxes on advertisement, taxes on veterinarians. And we made all those agreements about a year and a half ago, a lot of negotiating. I basically closed everyone in a door, brought some bologna sandwiches, and said, we're going to get an agreement on major tax reform in North Carolina, because there hadn't been any in 60 years. And I'm very proud of that. I think it's wrong for a year and a half later for those who wanted to go even further to go and say, well, let's start it all up again. I think that sends a message to our business community and to individual small businesses and to individuals that we need some continuity on what to predict regarding our taxes. And let's give this some time, 2 or 3, 4 years, to see how it works, see what the revenue streams are like. And I'm pleased to report that, you know, it looks like the revenue streams are coming in very well, partly due to the economy growing. Mm-hmm. And I think that the tax reform helped. We're talking about a $400 million surplus now. When I did the budget just 6 months ago, 4 months ago, as governor, I threw the budget first. We had a $300 million deficit. Yeah. That's a $700 million turnaround.
The budget's still being debated. You signed an extension of discussion. In other words, the fiscal year started July 1st, and we don't have a budget. Right. So you're keeping the government running for 6 more weeks until August 17th, I think, till they make a decision on the budget. There are items in that budget affecting education. For the third year in a row, there's a disagreement between the House and Senate about how much money should be allocated for teacher assistance. I thought we'd settled that. But the Senate is skeptical of the value of these assistants, and they want to cut funding for those positions in half. The House would keep the funding at its present level, which is about $375 million. You have a different point of view. Talk about that.
My point of view is let the local superintendents make that decision. Give them the same amount of money that we've given in the past and let them decide, do I want more teacher assistants or do I want more teachers? Why should we be making a one-fit-all decision in Raleigh for all the school systems, 100 different school systems at least, more than 100 actually, in North Carolina? So give them the same amount of money and tell your superintendents and the principals and your school boards, you decide how best to spend that money. Some schools might say, you know, I want some additional extra full-time teachers. Other schools, heck no, I want even more teachers' assistants. Let them decide, not us decide in Raleigh.
The $375 million figure, that's not the total the state gives to education across the state, is
no,
it?
No, so I don't have the numbers right
so
in front of me.
So that's 4 teacher assistants, correct?
Right, I would give that exact same amount.
Okay.
But then if the schools want to spend that on other than teacher's assistance on more teachers, let them make that decision. I frankly think teacher's assistance is a great thing, especially for first, second, and third grade. That's when they're needed the most. But if a superintendent disagrees with me in Buncombe County or another county or Harnett County, anywhere, Catawba County, they can disagree with me.
Didn't the legislature already loosen control over education funds and let the district
in
have
some
more?
Areas? This is one thing that I've changed as governor. Is I don't want. I'm a conservative who believes in more local control, and this is where I'm having disagreements, especially with my Senate colleagues who. They want to make decisions for every county in the state regarding a lot of things, and I think as kind of a Reagan Republican who hated it, I hated it when President Obama tells us what to do. I go, wait a minute, don't do one fit plan for all 50 states. I feel Raleigh ought to be doing the same thing. Give some flexibility to local government.
We're going to come back to legislative reach or overreach, I suppose, depending on your point of view in a second. But the House and Senate also disagree on whether to continue offering driver's education classes to students. At the moment, I understand this, in the CMS system, parents pay about $55 of the $335 that it costs to have a student go through driver's education. And that gives them, I think, well, the state mandates 30 hours of driver's education, classroom training, and 12 hours of behind-the-wheel training with an instructor before a person can even go and get their learner's permit. If you take away driver's education, how do you make that law work?
I don't think it's going to happen. First of all, if you're going to have a mandate of the law, then you've got to give the flexibility in how you pay for it. And I think the law is needed. I think you have to have driver's education, and I don't anticipate driver's education being dropped.
Why is it being proposed?
It's all money. So who pay? The state was paying for a lot of that subsidy, and it comes to money. Who pays for what? And is that a local responsibility or state responsibility? I frankly think more of the responsibility needs to be on the driver. If you can't afford education, driver's education, can you even afford a car or the insurance? So I think more of that cost of driver's education needs to be transferred to the people who are actually taking the driver's education.
Aren't you penalizing?
But you should not stop driver's education at all.
Okay. The budget proposals that we've been seeing come out of Raleigh also include what some news reporters have called little-noticed provisions. Items like a provision to block media access to public records, aimed like your travel records, for instance, your schedule, or a provision that would repeal a law aimed at limiting the dominance of a local hospital in a regional hospital market. There's another provision that the Charlotte Observer says could drive bank traders out of Charlotte. And the Raleigh News and Observer reported on a provision that would threaten special downtown tax districts that fund development agencies. In Charlotte, that would mean Charlotte Center City Partners and also University City Partners. I know that you are very well aware of what Charlotte Center City Partners does for downtown Charlotte. So talk about that. Are these little notice provisions intentional moves by the legislature to slip things in under the radar, or is this just a normal way of doing business?
It's the way Raleigh has sadly done business for 20 years. The Democrats used to do it this way, and I criticize the Democrats for doing it this way, and I will criticize my fellow Republicans for doing it. I'd be hypocritical if I didn't accuse them of they're slipping in things into the budget because they're bills that they couldn't get the votes individually, and that is wrong. These items should be voted as separate bills individually so the people can discuss them and know them and hear them, and this is where it puts me at a major disadvantage as governor because I don't have line item veto. So I'm going through every part of any budget which has non-budget items in addition to budget items, and we have a lot of non-budget items in this. This is things that Bass Knight and Rand and Perdue and them used to do, and I was critical of, and I will be critical of my own party.
Well, the Observer says that you can do something about it. In their editorial this morning, they say you can tell lawmakers that you will not sign a budget unless it includes a provision banning, beginning in the next session, any budget item that changes law or written state policy. Of course, if you do that, that could be politically untenable for you, I suppose.
Well, how you define that would be a little more complicated because some budget also impacts policy. So, but I basically agree with that editorial except for some of the rude disingenuous remarks, but that the Observer usually does. But I actually agree with that concept.
So these downtown special tax districts, these raise taxes in a certain area of town to pay for what?
For example,
Charlotte Center City Partners.
Charlotte Center City Partners has a special tax that they tax both residential and businesses to provide extra services for the center city. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a local decision that the Charlotte City Council allows.
Another of these provisions would eliminate state-paid health retirement benefits for teachers and state employees after January 1st of 2016. What's your take on that?
Again, that should not be in the budget. That should be an individual item. But it is an item that's worthy of discussion for the future on how much we can afford unfunded liabilities of medical and other things for state employees, as we've seen for private sector employees during the last 10 or 20 years.
None of these little notice provisions were ever discussed in open debate on the floor. They were all done in committee meetings and slipped into a 500-page
bill.
Some
of them weren't even discussed in committee meeting. They were just slipped in.
So are there things in that 500-page budget that even the legislators who will be voting on it don't know are in there?
Some of them already voted on it within their own chambers, and I doubt they knew it was in there. Yeah, this is how Washington and Raleigh works, and I'm calling them out. I'll call them out whether it's Republican or Democratic Party. I could care less.
All right. Let's switch gears again and go back to the toll road. Mary is with us on the telephone. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having my call.
Go ahead.
My husband and I were at the meetings in Ballantyne a year and a half ago and 2 years ago. And at that time, we were told that the proposal was just in the planning stages, and therefore we were not privy to the details of the proposal. Can you please speak to that?
I'm not sure what meetings you were referring to at Ballantyne, because in Ballantyne it was a whole different issue.
It was NCDOT and CDOT. It was in regard to NCDOT and CDOT and a proposal.
It's tough for me to respond about a meeting I didn't state, but I know in the North 77 corridor where this proposal is being impacted, not the Ballantyne corridor at this point in time, is all the details were given. And sadly, I guess some people either didn't read it or agreed to it, and then they changed their mind.
Mary, thank you for your call. Let's go to Mark, who has a question about the exact same topic. You're on WFAE, Mark. Hello, Mark.
I was just on NPR.
because of our corrupt government.
Well, all right. Let's try this again. Let me see here. Mark, go ahead. You're on WFAE.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I used to live on Catawba Avenue in Cornelius, and I remember when Governor Perdue came up to talk about the toll road, and everybody was excited, and I can't understand why so much has changed in the 6 or 7 years and where we're at in this moment. But my question is, with 3 or more people, is it going to be free to drive on the toll road?
Yes, it'll be. You can choose the express lane for free with at least 3 people.
Okay, and my second question is, I was told that the price would be dictated by they wanted the speed to stay a certain miles per hour, and so you know, they would go up on the price to keep people, I guess, out of the lane. To keep it at 45 or 50. Is that a true statement?
One of the goals of this express lane is to get all lanes moving quicker and get people into the other lane. But again, people will have a choice on whether they want to take that lane or stay into the other lanes. And one of the things I disagree with is toll roads where you don't have a choice. And I think everyone ought to have a choice of taking an alternative route if they cannot afford or don't want to pay
that lane.
Well,
people have called it the Lexus lane for that very reason. Well, you're going to have a choice if you have the money.
That's correct. That is correct.
Is that fair?
It's the same way we pay for bus systems. We pay for a lot of systems that you have to pay for. And this is an extra service that you have to pay for. And we pay through gas tax. We pay for a lot of things.
But the other criticism is that because we're giving the operation of this toll lane to a company for 50 years, that we can't impinge on their ability to generate revenue, and therefore widening the non-paid lanes, the free lanes, is not going to be a possibility. Because if we make the highway wider, fewer people would be choosing the toll road, and that would go against the contract. That's true, correct?
That's correct.
So is that wise? I mean, 50 years from now, who knows what
traffic will be like? I'm not even sure. First of all, I'm not even sure how much right-of-way will be left to add additional lanes in the next 50 years, which is going to be a problem on all of I-77. There's only so much road capacity and right-of-way for additional lanes. But I'll make the other point again. The local officials voted to support this effort.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Mark. I'll take one more before we go to the break. John, you're on WFAE. Welcome.
Yes, I'm hoping the governor's leadership in finally getting the Medicaid funds that North Carolina has refused to take, leaving the hospitals and leaving the citizens to pay for the cost of those who can't afford medical care, is something that he will take a leadership role in his last 2 years. Certainly, if the governor speaks loudly enough, I think the consensus in North Carolina is that it is time for this to happen here, as it has in other states where Republican governors have taken the lead.
Let me also echo a comment that Rhonda has supplied us from Facebook. When will you do the right thing and accept federal funds to extend the benefits of the Affordable Care insurance coverage to 500,000 more people in our state? She's referring to the Medicaid hole there.
I think there are two issues that still haven't been answered, and she didn't answer it in her question, is how are we going to find the money to cover the 10% additional cost? And we have no idea how many hundreds of millions of dollars that will be. And I don't know where that money would come from to pay the additional costs that the federal government would not be paying for. In addition, I'm trying to work with the Obama administration and giving us waivers, which I think are sound waivers. If we expand Medicaid, can we make a work and training requirement very similar that I did for public housing in Charlotte? For people who are able to work if they want this extensive coverage. And at this point in time, the Obama administration is saying no.
I'm going to come back to Medicaid when we come back from the break, and we'll take some more of your questions and comments. We have a lot of people waiting on Facebook and Twitter for me to read their comments to you, and we'll talk about legislative reach and the Confederate flag on our license plates, among other things. When we come back with Governor Pat McCrory, it's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Knight Foundation promotes informed and engaged communities and helps NPR advance journalism excellence in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org. Eurozone.org. Eurozone leaders reached a unanimous agreement that would pave the way for a third bailout of Greece in 5 years. What's in the deal and prospects for passage in Greek and European parliaments coming up at 10 o'clock in 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation with Governor McCrory, now's your shot. You can call us at 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Every day, NPR's All Things Considered includes news that keeps you ahead of the curve.
There has never been so much data about so many of us so easily available to law enforcement.
Plus, the unexpected.
The biggest concern is still what's in the water. Who wants to eat a cow that drinks water laced with benzene?
All Things Considered from NPR News.
Stay up to date with All Things Considered weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Governor Pat McCrory in the studio this morning. 704-926-WFAE is our telephone number. That's 704-926-9323.
Let's talk about Charlotte squawks.
Let's not. It's long gone, over and done with.
You did good.
No, so did you. That's enough of that. Let's talk about Medicaid. Let's talk about the fact that you said several years ago that we cannot afford to expand Medicaid and that the system is broken and it needs to be fixed
still
before
is.
We expand it. That was 2 years ago, I think.
Right, and still it's
what
we've
work
made,
has been done so
well,
far?
Well, when I came to office, we had a $500 million misforecast by the Purdue administration. Now we're, I think, $50 to $60 million surplus, which is a major fix. We implemented a computer program, which was bought by the previous administration, which we called all the heat for, but we're the ones who turned it on. And now it's about 99.5% capacity working. We've still got some major issues regarding Medicaid. It's such a huge part of our budget. So if we add any more people to it, we've got to also find the money to add to
it. Well, how much of it was foot-dragging because Republicans don't like the Affordable Care Act? And now that the Supreme Court has said it's okay to go forward with the Affordable Care Act, will the foot-dragging be less than it was as it becomes more used,
in
more
fixing
popular?
The Medicaid?
Well, yeah, all of it. It's all
nothing,
part of the package.
There's nothing. It was the Republicans in this administration who are finally fixing the Medicaid mess that we inherited in North Carolina. And it's been a mess for well over a decade. I think they had in 7 years, they had six Medicaid direct or DHHS directors. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a total mess. And we're Aldona Voss, who sadly the Charlotte Observer demeaned many, many times, she has done an outstanding job, and I'm proud of her public service.
Okay. Let's talk about the legislature, because you've just said a few minutes ago that the legislature seems to want, particularly the Senate, wants to put their stamp on a lot of things that historically have belonged to local governments. They've tried to take control of the Asheville water system? Is that what it was?
Yes. That was actually the House.
Okay.
Well, some House members did that.
The Senate tried to take control of the Charlotte Airport. That's still up in the air, no pun intended. The legislature has decided to do away with at-large council seats in Greensboro City Council election. In favor of eight districts and a mayor elected by the entire city, and they would limit the mayor's vote to ties, which is similar to what Charlotte is. It also dramatically redraws district lines. You've called this measure shameful. Why?
Because I think we have a system where we have a lot of people who are elected to go to Raleigh to do their job. And that's the budget, that's transportation, that's health and human services. And at times they can't let go of what they maybe used to be doing local government. A former city council member from Greensboro is the one who proposed who's now a state senator, proposed the change in Greensboro. Mm-hmm. And my message to them is if they still want to be on the Charlotte City or the Greensboro City Council, they ought to go back and run for the Greensboro City Council.
Isn't part of the redistricting a way to fill that council with more Republicans than with Democrats?
Absolutely. It was a political decision made in Raleigh for Greensboro, which was wrong. And again, I will call out my own Republicans when I called out Democrats for doing the same thing.
Now, Greensboro, as I understand it, is considering legal action to stop this from happening. Given that the state has the power to dissolve cities if they want to, do they have a leg to stand on here?
I do not know. I think the state can do most of what they did. The process might be challenged in how they did it.
And if
again, it was a local bill, which I did not have the opportunity to veto in it. They had a tough time getting the votes in the House, but in the last days before the vacation July recess, they got the votes.
If it isn't successfully challenged, what are the implications for Charlotte, for other cities around
the state?
I think
the implications are very negative, where there'd be concern, what else can Raleigh do, just like I have concerns about what Washington will do to Raleigh. And I've stated for the record, if Washington did to Raleigh what Raleigh did to Greensboro, there'd be a lot of people raising Cain in Raleigh.
Well, explain that. A lot of Republicans talk about the overreach of Washington and we should have local control and state should control all things. Decisions shouldn't be coming down from Washington. And here we have a Republican legislature in Raleigh who wants to get involved in city and county issues. Why?
It's not the conservative thing to do, and they are going against what I consider to be conservative values, which is promoting government closest to the people and not having strong central government authority. And you'll have to ask them why. I've stated my opinion very strongly.
You've just said that it's a problem of people in the legislature wanting to be involved in city councils, and they should run for city council. That's what they want. But the Republican representative, Michael, is it Speciale? Is that how you say his name? Of New Bern, says that you, being the governor, just cannot seem to get that you are no longer a mayor and that we are not your alderman, he says. As usual, the governor's comments about the General Assembly are sophomoric and born of ignorance and a lack of knowledge. The executive branch needs your attention, governor, not the legislative branch. These are his words. We must be doing all right in the General Assembly since the governor sure hasn't hesitated to take credit for many of our accomplishments. You want to respond to that?
Nah, it's not worth it. What's a guy in New Bern trying to decide this Greensboro City Council? Why has he got time to decide how the Greensboro City Council should be set up when they haven't even completed the budget? Makes no sense whatsoever. And again, guys, I'm an outsider. I'm coming in from the outside. And I said I wouldn't be afraid to step on toes for either party, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Okay. We have a couple of things on Facebook and Twitter I want to share with you. Jeremy writes, if magistrates are going to be exempt from performing a task of their job based on religious objections, could I, as a public school teacher, claim exemption from teaching as a child based on a legitimate religious conflict? This, of course, goes to the fact that the legislature says that magistrates around the state can opt out of marrying same-sex couples if they have a religious objection to that. And several people have said, well, it's their constitutional obligation to perform their job. So talk about that. What's your point of view there?
I believe if you take an oath of office where I put my hand on my family Bible, I put my left hand on my family Bible when I took the oath of office and raised my right hand to follow not only the constitutional laws of North Carolina, but the constitutional laws of the United States, we ought to do it, and there should not be an asterisk. And sadly, the legislature overrode my veto. They took many, many tries to do it, but they finally did after a lot of arm twisting, and I think it sets terrible precedent.
Bill wants to know what the status of the medical deduction is. I'm disabled and was devastated by a $3,000 tax hike last year by the elimination of the medical deduction.
I anticipate that to be reversed, and I reversed it in my budget, and I anticipate full support from both the Senate and the House to have the medical deduction put back in place where it should be.
We'll take a call from Mac in Cornelius, directly affected, obviously, by the toll lanes on 77 that have been proposed. Mac, go ahead.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Governor. I put together the business trip to Raleigh, and there's definitely a legitimate outcry from local businesses about the economic impact of the toll lanes, and we feel that it creates, you know, a negative impact for the state and local economy and then create a competitive disadvantage for the state. I'd like to hear your take on that.
Well, listen, I share some of your concern. I just wish your local elected officials would have expressed this opinion before the decisions were finally finalized, because the state was moving based upon what the local officials stated they wanted since 2007. And I'm also kind of saddened that the business community got in this process, an extremely late process. But I hear what you're saying. I share some of those concerns. But we were doing what the local planning organization voted to do, and we're following their lead at the state level.
Thank you for your call, Mac. Let's go to Deb in Wadesboro. Deb, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. Oh, Governor McCrory, how could they drop the air quality monitoring for I remember the cold air days. I have two grandchildren with asthma and my husband. We're out here in Wadesboro, but I'm telling you, the wind blows from west to east. And also, I've joined a little group called ncwarren.org, and now I understand they're going to be penalized if they try to fight with the state at all about getting more solar energy and keeping the air clean. So this is a major concern. This is a health concern. My two grandkids, you know, you don't want to watch these kids struggle to breathe. My husband used to put a string on the back porch.
And Deb, what is your question?
My question is, what are you going to do about that? Aren't they going to continue to monitor the air quality? We've had much better air the last year or two.
Okay.
I guarantee you our Diener department, our environmental department, will continue to monitor air quality. Regarding the solar power, I think the big debate regarding solar power is going to be how much longer will all the other ratepayers subsidize solar power and how much more will that increase rates. And there's going to have to be a certain point in time for every energy source in which you finally not have subsidies. And most people don't realize, but solar power is heavily subsidized by ratepayers. And you pay more of your electric bill for the subsidies of major solar facilities throughout North Carolina and throughout the nation. And the question is going to be is how much longer will the solar investors get subsidies in order to start their businesses? I frankly think we need to continue some subsidies, but it needs to be gradually phased out. So the investors know we got to stand on our own at a certain point in time, because we also have to have low electric rates for poor people and for everyone in North Carolina. And you're adding to the cost every month of your utility bill.
There's been a new way of delivering solar power to people who can't afford to put the arrays on their roof, where you rent from a company who will then put the array on your roof. You pay rent to them. They sell the power.
They probably get a subsidy too.
Well, I'm just saying that they sell the power to Duke Energy, and there's a
and then they get a
opposition
subsidy
to Duke Energy to that
because of the subsidies. And it's not just Duke Energy; it's all users.
Duke Energy would have to pay retail for the power they buy from that solar array, and they want to pay at the wholesale rate, which makes it economically unfeasible.
And then if they don't, they'd pass on the cost to all other ratepayers, and that's the subsidies that you're talking about.
Speaking of Duke, David on Facebook says, why are two toxic coal slurry ponds owned by your former employer allowed to leak toxic waste into our drinking water? What is being done? As governor, what are you doing to protect the people of North Carolina rather than the corporations?
That's not a correct statement. We do not allow that to happen. And when we see that happening or find that happening, we take immediate action. But it also has to go through the process to take that action through the courts.
Okay.
And this administration has taken more action on that issue than any other administration in state history.
Heather wants to know how ending voter pre-registration for high school students contributes to the integrity and turnout of our elections. That's one of the things that these new voter ID laws have done. Eliminating this practice, she says, combined with the 25-day waiting period, means that high school students who turn 18 less than 25 days before the election cannot vote. How does this help turnout, enthusiasm, etc., when our youth need it most?
I don't think that prohibits anyone who's 18 from not voting. That is an incorrect statement. If you're 18, you will be able to vote, period. If you're 18, you will be able to vote, so that statement's incorrect.
Okay. Kat, you're on WFAE. Welcome.
Yes, hi. I'm an educator. I've been teaching for about a decade, and I'm concerned about teacher pay. The starting salary in North Carolina is about $33,000. We are 46th in the state in terms of teacher pay. And I'm just wondering if it is a priority to sort of, you know, boost our ability to be more competitive with states that are on the cutting edge. I feel like it's, you know, it's gone on long enough. I'm just wondering if there's anything we can do in the short or the long term.
Absolutely. And first, let me thank you for teaching. I personally got my teaching degree when I graduated from Catawba College. Before I became governor, there had not been a teacher pay raise for over 5 years. And that's the first thing I did. And now when I came to office, the starting pay was $30,000. Last year, we upped it to $33,000. In my budget this year, we'll up it to $35,000. So we've gone from $30,000 to $35,000 for entry-level teachers. And that's to me, pretty significant. I've put over $1 billion, new dollars, into education since I've come into office, and we're planning to put more money into teacher pay raises this year for all teachers, not just beginning teachers.
Do you still agree with the fact that you are giving bigger raises to early-level teachers as opposed to long-time teachers? You still agree with that?
We gave initial raises to entry-level teachers and to teachers with 1 to 8 years of experience because that's where we had the largest attrition rate. So we're doing just like the private sector does, is you have to hit you have to deal with those teachers that are leaving the system and making other choices, and that's what we did first. But we're also now putting in our budget pay raises for all teachers, and that's been our goal. And again, before I came to office, there were not teacher pay raises for anybody, and I'm very, very proud of the success that we've had in not only respecting teachers, but also both respecting teachers and giving them pay raises. And now my next goal is to reduce the number of tests that they have to give, a lot of duplicate tests that teachers are now being required to teach by test instead of teaching according to their skill, which I think is extremely disrespectful to the teaching profession.
Kat, thank you for your call. Now that South Carolina has removed the Confederate flag from its state house grounds, as Alabama has removed its flag from its
state. By the way, one other thing I did want to mention about teachers, the veteran teacher pay raise in my budget, I think, are getting a 10% pay raise.
Okay.
So that's pretty good.
Alabama's taken the Confederate flag down. South Carolina has taken the Confederate flag down. You have suggested that we stop issuing license plates, especially license plates bearing the flag. Given the proximity of our two states and the fact that former State Senator Malcolm Graham lost a sister in that shooting in Charleston, why hasn't there been more outcry, more support, more fervor toward ridding the state of or removing the option of having a Confederate flag license plate?
Well, we had a legal issue. The Senate thought I had the power to do it, and I do not have that power to do it. So we're hopefully drawing up legislation. I'm working with some House members at this point.
How do you know? Senator Pro Tem, Phil Berger says you do have the power.
He's incorrect. Believe me, if I had the power, I'd do it right now. For the ones they want to give me some info, I'd love to do it right away. But I've been very consistent. When the statute says what I can and cannot do, I follow that statute.
Well, isn't part of the problem.
And the House lawyers agree with that.
Isn't part of the problem that the DMV has to issue plates to civic groups that have to include, by law, their emblem? And the
That's
emblem
correct.
Of the Sons of Confederate Veterans is that flag?
The statute clearly states that, yes.
Okay. Governor Pat McCrory, always a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you very much. Great seeing you again,
thank
Mike.
Thank you for being here.
Great being back home.
And thank you. Yeah, well, good. Nice to have you. You can go have cookies now at Reed's.
Love Reed's.
Thank you for the hour.